I talk about Manchester as the global capital of football.
Hello and welcome back to another Manchester United podcast.
Woohoo!
I'm Helen.
I'm Aza.
I'm Sam.
Didn't think we needed full names there.
No, didn't need them. Well, who needs them? They know who we are.
Nope, they know who
and
we are.
And if they don't, look them up. Yep. We're worth it.
Good week, guys. Maisie, start with you.
What day is it today?
Friday.
Big Friday.
Yeah, decent. Yeah, not bad.
Good.
Don't think I've done anything.
Yeah.
Still walking?
Yeah. Had a lovely walk up.
Just a comment on him.
What was it called?
He's Winter Hill.
Winter Hill. Went up walking up there in Bolton. What did you say? I don't even know what you're on. What are you two laughing at?
Nothing.
Children.
I'm just glad you're still walking.
Yeah, the old ham and eggs are still going, yeah.
That's good.
Still walking.
What about you, Sam? Good week?
Yeah, it's been all right. I'm now over some sort of small cold or something. Didn't go to five-a-side last night just to make sure I was fresh for this. But you can still just about hear it. Go on.
And you're still walking too?
You've
That's
got
good
a cold.
News.
Well, no, I had a cold. And a sore throat.
It's not going to do with football. Just,
well, I didn't
just
go.
Play.
I'm just sad. Well, because I wanted to
what are you going
to
do? Spread it?
No, I wasn't worried about that. I was worried that I'm feeble and therefore I wouldn't be very good on the podcast. So,
well, I went on holiday last week.
All right.
Oh, don't we know? Don't we know?
How was it?
Lovely, thank you.
Big
a little
legs.
Week away and, for the winter and, break. Yes, we went to Dubai. There was
you and Harry.
Yes, I saw Rory McIlroy's caddy in the hotel, who's called Harry Diamond.
Good name.
Who is a massive Man United fan, and I was telling Maisie about it.
Did he listen to the podcast?
He invited us to the golf. I don't know, actually. I should have asked him that.
Can we podcast at the golf?
I bet that he will listen to it because he must be always travelling and he loves Man United.
Yeah.
And why wouldn't you listen to our podcast?
They'd be counting the shekels as well.
Anyway,
Rory won again.
So, yes, I had a good week.
That sounds lovely.
Bit of vitamin D.
Was it not sunny? No? Do you just sit in the shade when you go away?
I don't tan in Dubai.
No, I can see that.
It's tough.
Just Dubai or do you tan in Portugal?
Do.
Is it a different sun?
Yeah, well, in the winter in Dubai, it's the UV rays aren't as strong, are they? This is not based on any scientific facts whatsoever.
It does sound tough.
I just don't seem to tan.
Sounds tough.
Anyway.
Hard life here.
I'll interject, shall I, and say that I think we are currently sat in a meeting room at the Greater Manchester Central Authority? Combined Authority. We're at the Greater Manchester Combined Authority, which is a building. It looks nice from the outside.
Beautiful.
Very nice building.
It's not as nice on the inside. Just saying, this meeting room is quite generic. I'm not picking on it. It's just a normal meeting room.
You know what to do, Sam. You know, if you're not welcome here, you don't like it, do one.
Yeah, because we've been invited to the mayor's office.
Yeah, to speak to Andy Burnham. Obviously, he is an Everton fan. So I think probably the first person on our podcast that hasn't played for Manchester United and doesn't have that direct association to Manchester United, but a huge association to Manchester. And he's a huge sports fan, a Premier League fan. And he went to Munich last year to pay his respects in the 65th anniversary of the Munich air disaster. And someone who will have an awful lot to tell us about how Manchester United are represented on the world stage, because he has a role in that.
Who would have thought, us and the politicians?
Yeah. We should sort out the car park in Manchester, though. Gridlocked it all the time. Well, it's like a car park, Saturday nights. Horrendous.
Is that what route you're going to go down, Maisie?
Well,
Excuse the pun.
While I'm here, I might as well ask a question. It might not go out on the podcast, but I'll certainly ask a question. Why has he turned it into a car park? Because shutting off Deansgate was an absolute joke.
He's just got in now, so probably just get through. I'll bring it in.
No problem.
Okay, thank you.
Don't know if you heard that. You probably picked up on the mics, but he's about to come in.
Yep.
So here he is.
Just
and he's
break.
In a good mood, apparently, so it's a good time to ask
him. Because
the
clock leaving, so might get something good out of him. We'll see.
Yep.
Here he is. Here's Andy Burnham.
Andy, welcome to United Podcast.
Thanks so much.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm well today. Am I able to say this is the day?
Yes.
Klopp has left Liverpool. So I recognise he's done all right for them. But am I allowed to feel a sense of relief today?
You can feel however you feel. And you're I think you're.
Instead of feelings mutual.
Yeah, we're all there
we're
together.
We're all together on that one.
Yeah. We're all pretty happy about it.
Yeah, we are.
So, going to start with what will feel like an obvious question. We interviewed Eric Steele once, the former goalkeeping coach, and I got a lot of stick for asking him what a goalkeeping coach does. But I'm going to put my foot in that water again and just start with, what does the mayor of Manchester actually do?
Greater Manchester. Yes. what do I do? That's a good question.
Good question.
What don't I do? It sometimes is what it feels. But no, it's a massive privilege to do this. Obviously, it's to provide leadership to the city region. So not just the city, but the 10 boroughs. Set a direction as to where we're going. Obviously, deal with specific things like policing, transport. These are tough issues, as we all know. Fire planning, you know, so big, difficult issues. But overall, it's to kind of keep the city region powering forward. And we are, we're outside of London. We're the success story. You know, the eyes are on us, and long may it be. So it's not built by me, by the way. Lots of people before me have put Greater Manchester in this position that we're in, but it is incumbent on me to keep building that success story and driving it forward. It's a great job. It's the best job I've ever had. I consider it a massive privilege to do what I do. I do it to the best of my ability. Appreciate that might not be good enough for everybody, but I can honestly say, you know, I love it, and I've given my all to it.
It's no secret that you are from Liverpool and an Everton fan, hence the conversation about Jurgen Klopp, but you do have a great affection and affiliation with Manchester, of course, now. Actually, I should firstly ask you, have you listened to the Manchester United podcast?
I have. I listen. And I'm not just saying that, like a true politician, you know. I consume a lot of football-related content, including the podcast. I mean, just to say something about my own background, I was born in Aintree in Liverpool. I cannot deny that. But when I was one, my dad got a job in Manchester city centre. So we, as a family, moved over this way. We actually grew up in the Lee area, actually. But I spent my sort of youth really in the Manchester area. I'm a classic of both, really, or certainly a woolly back to the Liverpool end of things. But the family has always had that connection. And I was really privileged last year to go out with the club to the 65th commemoration of the Munich air disaster in Munich. And I related the fact that my dad, who was training in the old post office in Manchester at the time, did attend the first game at Old Trafford after the disaster. And I don't know, they're just as, in my lifetime anyway, there's always been a connection between Everton and Manchester United. I think there has been a sort of similar, if you like, social background in terms of the development of both clubs. So, yeah, it was there in my family. And I've always felt a bit of an affiliation. Mm-hmm.
Is that something your dad spoke to you about when you were younger?
He did, yeah. My dad's getting on now, but, you know, a football man through and through. We just were as a family, you know, we were Everton, both sides of the family. And I think it's to be honest, there is a sort of religious thing here. It was Catholic upbringing. And, you know, I think often there was an Irish influence in Everton as a club, and that kind of brought that affiliation. I think in Manchester United as well, with the kind of Irish connection through the docks in Salford. And, you know, so there was a kind of shared history, I think, cultural sort of history. And, we were just a football family. And, home and away, really, when Everton ruled the world in the 1980s, which was lucky to be a teenager at that time.
I'm too small to remember.
It's hard to get your head around that now, isn't it?
Did you play football as a kid?
I did, David. Kind of the signs were there that I was going to be a politician, because I was just a kind of a prima donna goal hanger. I let everyone else do the work and try to take the glory. I was a decent, I've been a kind of decent, lowish level footballer, but I was a much better cricketer, actually. So I played for Lancashire Schoolboys cricket.
Very good.
But yeah, again, never quite of the right standard there. But
so when did you start actually then getting into politics? At what age?
So I grew up in the 1980s. So I was, you know, those were my teenage years.
I think it was about 6 months between us.
Yeah. So 1970. I was born right at the start of the 70s.
Yeah, I've got to say.
June 70. I do look better.
The athlete is not aging as well as the politician.
I'll take that. The podcast, take note of what was just said. We're of the same of the same era. And so you'll remember life in the Northwest in the 80s.
Absolutely.
You know, it was kind of tough, wasn't it? I was growing up in that Lee area, so for me, you know, I saw the miners strike quite at close quarters. It was actually my experience of being an Everton supporter that meant that I was at Villa Park on the 15th of April, 1989, but lots of my friends were at Hillsborough. And that kind of experience, you know, having lived through the 80s and how difficult it was, and then seeing it really come very close to home and understanding the issues, because I'd been watching Everton in a third round FA Cup game the year before, 88, so I knew how unsafe the Leppings Lane was. And then to see what happen, and then, if you like, parts of the country turn against football. It wasn't just locals, was it? It was football supporters at that time. I think all of that planted political seeds, really. And, you know, I kind of was changed, really, by that whole experience.
Is that what led you? Because you've been so vocal in your work with getting justice for everything that happened in relation to Hillsborough. Is that so? That didn't come about because you were a politician and the opportunities were there. It came about because of your upbringing, because you saw it and you chased it actively.
Yeah, if I'm honest with you, it actually prompted something of a personal crisis when I was culture secretary in 2009, and the current mayor of Liverpool, who does my job over in Liverpool, but was then the Lord Mayor, when he formally invited me to the 20th anniversary, and I just kind of knew I was in a government that hadn't done enough.
Is that when you spoke at Anfield and they just screamed at you?
Yeah. But I kind of, you know, I didn't kind of walk in there as an innocent. I knew what I was walking into. And the reason why I say it prompted a crisis, I agonized that day about whether I should go because I knew I was in a government that just hadn't done enough. It promised to open the issue and then kind of carried on the stitch up in the early days of the government. So the way I've described it is that day when I walked out to face the cop in 2009, April, 20 years on from Hillsborough, I kind of knew I was like walking to the edge of the abyss between the government I was in and the people I grew up with. I knew it was that stark. And I had to ask some really serious questions of myself about why was I in it? What was I in politics for? Was it not to do something about something like that? That I knew personally the backstory, you know, because as I said to David, I was at Hillsborough in 1988 and experienced the Leppings Lane then. So yeah, I kind of, basically what I had to decide to do was kind of, if you like, step outside the disciplines of government. And I kind of went there knowing I was going to try and open it up without any permission to do that. But yeah, in the end, that became something of a crossroads for me. And I think I took my first steps out of Westminster really on that day, because I kind of was on a different path then. But I'd lived in that system that, as we all know, disrespects the north of England, you know, doesn't treat us equally, doesn't treat us fairly. It's not just Liverpool, it's everywhere gets the same treatment. And it almost kind of put me on a path to leave, really. And I was never really the same politician after that. But I look back on that as something really important to me because, you know, because of my background, I just, you know, obviously care for the people who'd suffered by that and all football supporters who were treated in that way in the 80s. But, you know, the question is, how could an entire northern English city be crying injustice for 20 years and no one in that Westminster system was listening for all of that time?
Well, the composure you had to finish your speech that day is extraordinary, I think. And then we jump forward to 2016, and this time you're speaking in the Houses of Parliament because we're at justice. We've reached the point of justice. Do you feel now, since then, that enough's been done, that the questions you asked of government, and at the time it was Theresa May was Home Secretary, do you think that the promises that were made have been met?
No, I think we've got the truth fully. You know, we have that second inquest verdict of unlawful killing. And that brings a degree of justice, but there was never individual accountability. Because it had gone too late and, you know, it was too hard then to bring those trials. So we got something, but I don't think it delivered what should have been fully delivered. And the passage of time probably played a part in that. But yeah, I kind of look at what's happening with the post office now and the contaminated blood scandal. And you could see this pattern keeps on repeating. And I think, you know, what we did through Hillsborough needs to really change the way the country works, really. You know, people should not be left in the wilderness this long. So it was a, you know, it was a kind of a thing that I look back on as, you know, as important for the Hillsborough families themselves, but I think it has, it is continuing to have broader ramifications for the way the country is run.
If I can just allow us, sorry, to go back to Manchester. When you represent Manchester around the country, around the world, what is the first football club people say to you?
Well, I think that's a very sort of leading question. But
I'm joking. That's not fair. That's not fair.
No, it is fair. I'll just give you an honest answer. People mentioned City, but it is Manchester United. And, you know, I think any football supporter would recognise this is the biggest football name in the world, I would say. I mean, there's no point in claiming otherwise. And as Mayor of Greater Manchester, I am acutely conscious of that all the time. And, you know, I like the fact that people talk about the club. I think it's because of that era, isn't it? I was talking about when my dad went to the game in 1958. But then what was built after 1958 and the story that was Manchester United through the 1960s, you know, it's just an incredible story that captivated the world, I think. And, you know, people still, kind of connect to that and everything that happened and the way that team played. You know, when Sir Bobby died, I was looking back at some of those matches, you know, some of those games, and the flair with which they played was, you know, it wasn't just the story of them coming back and winning. It was the way they did it and the characters in the team, you know. And I think that, you know, took Manchester United to sort of global prominence, didn't it? And people forged a connection with that club that's been handed down through families around the world. And yeah, you wouldn't believe the rooms I walk into and people, the first thing they think I'm an expert on your club, and your supporter base will be kind of shouting at this podcast now thinking that I'm speaking up for you. But I promise you, I do it respectfully. I do it with a very close regard for your history and your significance. And I try my best to do you justice at all times.
Yeah, as you'd said earlier, you did travel to Munich last year for the 65th anniversary. You give a speech in both English and German, is that correct?
I did start in German to a degree, which was a bold move on my part. But no, I felt it important to do so. And I found it a really moving occasion, actually, because, you know, it was obviously very much in the neighbourhood where the crash happened, and you know, people who come out for years, I think, to be there. Some of the I think the medical people who treated the players and the staff on the day were there. So it was a tremendous privilege to join the club on that, and I wanted to start in German, you know, recognizing and thanking the community for the way in which not just they helped on that day, but also the way in which they'd, you know, marked the significance of what happened ever since.
You're obviously an incredibly authentic football fan and an Evertonian. Lots of politicians could be accused of not being authentic football fans when World Cups and things come around and try and sort of attach themselves to football clubs. Do you think you would be able to do your job in the same capacity as you do if you were a Liverpool fan?
No. I've always been clear about that. You know, I support the acceptable face of Merseyside football in these parts. I'm very conscious of that. But I said before, I mean, I don't want to overplay this, but there always has been something of an affinity between Everton and Manchester United. I remember, I don't know whether David remembers, I don't know whether you were playing at that time, David. I think you might have been. It was the occasion of the passing of Sir Matt Busby. And do you remember that day?
Remember the day. I joined the year after, but I do remember the day, the
game.
Yeah.
Well, it was remarked at the time against Everton fans immaculately observed the minute silence at that point. And, you know, there's been connections between the clubs, hasn't there? Big connections in terms of players.
We've
certainly taken on board lots of your cast-offs over the years. I could name them if you want me to. You've done well out of us, it's fair to say. I remember, you know, being at the 1985 FA Cup final. The famous Norman Whiteside goal. Norman, who went on to play for us, actually. So, yeah, there's a lot of history, Everton and Manchester United, that's bound up together. So, yeah, I've always
Andy, what's your thoughts now then, Everton being done for financial fair play?
My thoughts about it, David, are that it's not that we don't deserve some form of punishment. And I'm not saying that it isn't right that, you know, clubs should be made to live within their means. But I don't think the way Everton have been treated has been fair.
No.
You know, the biggest ever penalty in the history of top flight English football for a £20 million overspend, which these days is, you know, when you're building a new ground and, you know, we've had COVID and Ukraine, which has had an impact on Everton. It doesn't feel right to me. And personally, I think it is linked to the Premier League's desire to push back an independent regulator for football. They're trying to prove that they can regulate, but they've overdone that with relation to Everton. Then to hit us with a second charge in the same, effectively same the same breath. Period or some overlap. You know, I don't know. It doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel that we're being treated fairly. And I mean, you know, United fans listening to this hopefully will appreciate the fact that this is, you know, it's not just special pleading on my part. We're talking about a founder member of the Football League in the 1880s. We're talking about a founder member of the Premier League. We're talking about, you know, a stage, Goodison Park, that you've played at. I saw you play there. That is one of the grandest old stages now in English football, isn't it? In terms of a traditional English football ground. Why shroud that ground in protest, you know, as it kind of goes into its final days? But that's what they're doing to us. You know, they've left a cloud hanging over this whole season. It feels like football, to me, is kind of changing in a really bad way, where it's lawyers and bureaucrats and are kind of the people who matter and not the players. And, you know, you can't celebrate a goal now, can you? Because you're like, who's going to kind of somehow come up with a reason why this can't be allowed? Or in the case of what's happening this season, we won't be able to celebrate staying up because there's going to be, the appeals are going to be heard after the, it's the spontaneity and the joy of football. What's happening?
So is Andy Burnham anti-VAR?
Do you know, I think I've come to that view.
I'll
be honest, I know it's maybe a big statement, but I've come to that view. I thought it would actually sort of even things up a bit. I would argue, and again, a difficult thing to say to all of you, but sometimes I would have said that some of the bigger clubs maybe got, you know, more of the rub of the green.
You don't have to look at the Villa incident last week or the week before.
Yeah.
3 minutes 30, was it? 3 minutes 40. It just kills the game. If you can't decide after 30 seconds, just get on with whatever the result was, whether it's a goal or offside.
But the thing is, with about immediate decision-making, you can be sure that you're just doing a decision on what you saw, aren't you? If you take the building 3 minutes for what else is coming into
people. Exactly.
Yeah.
But also when you slow it down, but that's not how decisions should be made, is it? Because you remember the Calvert-Lewin one at Palace in the Cup? You know,
horrendous.
In real time, no one batted an eyelid on the pitch. But then when you slow it down, and obviously it got overturned. But I think I've come to that view. The spontaneity of football matters, doesn't it? The joy of football matters.
Absolutely.
Not being able to celebrate a goal because you're all like, no, that's not why we pay our money to go to the match, is it?
Hopefully you won't be celebrating any goals, sorry, Sam, come March when, of course, we face each other. How do you see that game going?
I probably your way, but I think Everton are tougher to beat this year. Than they were last year. I think we played at a similar time last year around Easter, and it was a very comfortable 2-0 win, I think, for United that day. So, you know, I think it's probably been a slightly better season for us and a slightly tougher one for Manchester United. But I would not go there with any great hopes of anything from that game. You know, I look, you know, obviously I've watched United closely, and I just think, you know, it's all there. It's just a case of, you know, bringing it together. I'm interested now with somebody like Dave Brailsford coming closer to the club and sort of applying that kind of focus on performance. I think that's just probably what your supporters want to see, a sort of a culture of excellence and relentlessness in terms of on-pitch focus and, you know, kind of bringing that whole thing to the way that the club operates. I think it's there, that, you know, the ingredients are there, aren't they? And, you know, I think at times last year, it kind of really gelled, didn't it? And it felt like, you know, you were coming right back. So, you know, these things take time, don't they? But it feels to me, from what I can see, that the club's heading in the right direction.
Is it true? Around 1985, you was on Match of the Day.
Four, yeah.
84. Pete Boyle texted me this morning. And
Yeah, I know.
He was on 85, so it was you 84. And then you got on with you. Did your dad ever go at you or something?
He did, yeah. Pete, God, he's got a good memory, Pete. But this was the FA Cup semi-final the year before that final. It was when we got to the final to play Watford. And it was at the old Highbury, and I was in the North Bank. And Adrian Heath scored in the last minute of extra time. And a young Andy Burnham, I can't pretend that I was impeccably behaved. And I have been known once or twice in my youth to invade the odd playing surface. Entirely celebratory, I stress. But I did feature and... having promised my mum and dad that I behaved myself all the way through a day in London, they had some evidence to the contrary when I got home.
So he was always spies, even 30, 40 years later.
Yeah.
What was your favourite moment as a football fan?
Ever?
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of it's always kind of slightly qualified when you watch Everton, isn't it? It kind of tends to be sort of staying up. But No, goodness me, I've had some, incredible moments back in the 1980s. That was the team that, I think legitimately was the best team in Europe in the mid 80s. So it was when Everton beat, Rapid Vienna in, Rotterdam in 1985, European Cup Winners' Cup. So yeah, that was the pinnacle. But, in the semi-final, actually, most Evertonians would describe the Bayern Munich semi-final at Goodison Park in terms of what I was too young to go away to Rotterdam. But yeah, that game at Goodison Park, I was 15 years old. That's the game that I will always cherish. But in more recent times, you know, it's been, I'm afraid, goals on the last days of the season as we got last year that have kind of been the moments I have to cherish.
No, I was going
to
say, what could beat it? What's the ambition?
What, in terms of, you know...
Just anything, as wild as you want to be, yeah.
Everton ambition. You've got to kind of... I just want to see Everton... In my life, I just want to see Everton win one trophy again. Now, will that happen? I don't know. But that's all I want to...
You've got 30-odd years, I'd say.
When you do my job, David, I'm not entirely sure. Time's running out.
Similar
Come
age.
On, Sean, get this bloody trophy, will you?
We've taken 30 years now.
Yeah. Now, I've been lucky to have many great moments. I've played at Old Trafford. I've scored at Old Trafford. Even though I am a jobbing centre forward, I did score in front of the Stretford End once. I had an incredible moment last year. And here's another Manchester United privilege. You know, fancy this, going to Rome and presenting His Holiness Pope Francis with a Martinez, Lissandro Martinez shirt. That will live with me forever, I can promise you.
How did that come about? Because I remember I was away somewhere. I think, did we have a Champions League game or something? I can't remember. Maybe Europa League game. And I remember seeing it and I thought, oh.
How on earth did that happen? Yeah.
I'd totally forgotten about that.
A lot of people had that reaction. But, you know, it was, honestly, it was such a wonderful thing to do, really wonderful. Because we were doing a delegation to Rome. So it was the cathedral we're organizing, actually. It was a multi-faith delegation, not just the Catholic Church, but it was obviously all faiths. And we were invited to go and present in the Vatican on issues to do with climate change. And we were having a discussion before saying, well, what's the gift? And someone said to me, it's always a City and United shirt. So the idea was that we'd approach Alvarez and Martinez to see if, we could get a shirt from both. And as it happens, we got a kind of message back saying that Lissandro would be really keen to do it. And then he got injured, I think, just shortly around that time. But what came back was not just a shirt, his shirt, but with a personal message on it. It was an amazing gift that he'd created. So I felt I was very much carrying his gift to Pope Francis. And
did you stick a little Everton sticker on the back?
I didn't.
Blue shirt just stuck in the corner at the back.
I love doing it though, because that's what I was saying to you before about the power of the club, and it had, I could see, honestly, I think the Pope is a football man. And he actually, I'm told, collects.
This is not the way I expected.
No one's
this
ever said that on a podcast before.
I'm told so, but he collects football memorabilia. And you know, when you give his face absolutely lit up, and there was just some brilliant things going around social media that night. There were like
brilliant
pictures of the Sistine Chapel with the shirt in it, like Pope's put his new picture up. It was great, absolutely great. But no, that was a special thing. That was a special football moment for me.
On like a day to day, how much impact does being the mayor of Greater Manchester, with Manchester United being here, and to a lesser degree the little blue club, have on your life?
Huge, you know, and I'm deeply respectful of both clubs.
I don't know why.
I am.
I'm not.
And I'm going to say that on this podcast. And I know I'm going against the script here, but, you know, I talk about Manchester as the global capital of football. Now, why can I justify that? Because I've said to you already that I think in this city, we have the biggest name in world football. I do, Manchester United. But obviously we have currently, you may not like this bit, the most successful team in world football, Manchester City. But if you then kind of look back and from a historical point of view, we are one of two cities in Europe that have two Champions League winners in the city. It's only Milan who can say the same. And so, you know, immediately that puts you right up there. And if you do my job, I mean, obviously people are fascinated by that and the fact that we have two clubs of that stature. You know, it just is that, you know, it makes, and I love football. So I will want to talk about football with anybody when I go around the world. And I do go around, you know, promoting the place into Japan not long ago, the US. I love the chance to talk about football culture and what it means to the city, because that's the identity of this place, isn't it? And people are fascinated by it. So it's such a calling card, you know. And when, obviously, you know, we all miss him, don't we? But Sir Bobby, you know, again, when you have ambassadors like that in the city, Sir Alex, yeah, it's incredible. You know, I have at my kind of, if you like, disposal, sort of things that other mayors, not just in England, but around the world would love to have. Those kind of institutions, you know, around them. So I consider myself very lucky, but I never underplay it. You know, I'm absolutely, and the music as well. I'm the same with Manchester music. But no, I'm very, very proud, and I actually really, I'm really optimistic actually about where the club's going. You know, with Sir Jim coming in, and you know, this kind of early discussions we've had about how we may be able to support in terms of, you know, regeneration. Around Old Trafford. So, you know, we're hopefully moving into a really positive phase where things improve on the pitch, change in a good way happens around the ground. You know, this is going to be a good phase we're going into for Manchester United.
What's the local topic that you're discussing now?
Well, I thought we'd get on to transport, David, because I know you've been tweeting me.
I was going to stop there, but clearly he's got more.
I did have a little poppy about the traffic, which is an absolute nightmare. But I know that you do a hell of a lot for the homeless, and you obviously for those people that don't know, that you do donate a percentage of your wage to that as well.
I do. Yeah.
When's that going to change? When are we going to see Manchester not become homeless and get those people off the streets?
Yeah. Well, it kind of has changed in that the scheme that I set up called A Bed Every Night looks after 600 people every night.
Mm-hmm.
But that tells you something about the pressure that's there in terms of people who are at risk of homelessness now. And we've had a difficult situation recently where some of the, without going into all the politics of it, some of the government decisions has put more people onto the street. So, yeah, we're constantly working at that issue. But whenever somebody goes new onto the streets, we can usually offer them something, a place and a bed every night. Whereas go back 3-4 years ago, we just didn't have anything to offer them. The other big one's it is transport.
Yeah.
So the B network, people will see the buses, the yellow buses appearing around the city. We've got a big, just while this will be going out, 24th of March, the B network, that means the re-regulation of buses where, you know, we take control, the public takes control off the bus companies. That's going to Rochdale, Oldham, the rest of Bury and North Manchester. So, you know, that's a big change and that allows us to keep fares lower, and we can then integrate the buses with the trams in one single system like London. So if there's the biggest thing that's happening in the city right now is that change to the transport system.
Brilliant.
But we've also got a plan for a big alternative to the university route. You know, I think in this country, we're too obsessed with the university route and that gets pushed and pushed and pushed. What about the kids who want something else? You know, how are we going to give them a path to some of the brilliant opportunities we've got in our city now? So we're launching the Greater Manchester Baccalaureate later this year. And I know the Manchester United Foundation, John and all the team there are getting right behind it. We're calling it the MBAC. And the idea is to give it, you know, give kids who don't want to go on the university route real path towards opportunities and, you know, good jobs.
Brilliant.
David, can I ask you a couple of questions?
Of course, Kevin.
If you were the mayor of Greater Manchester, what would be the first thing that you would do?
I would certainly reopen Deansgate because whenever you come out on a Saturday night, it's absolutely horrendous. and I would certainly help you sort out the homeless.
Yeah.
Because I think that's... I did the sleep out at Old Trafford. And so much as we're under... You're under shelter, you got a nice sleeping bag and you got hot drinks and all that. People don't have that. And it's horrendous that we're in 2024.
Yeah.
And that's still going on. And it's, I mean, I'm from Middleton, so, you know, it's not the most affluent of areas. And it's just horrible to see people like that day in, day out. Whenever you come to Manchester, it's shocking.
It is. It should be, I think it should be a human right at home. You can't have anything in life without home. If you've not got a stable home, what can you do? You just can't move forward, can you, without a home?
Speaking as the most southern person here, obviously you're a fan of the north. This is a really smooth segue to get you to do some plugging. So I came from the south to the north. Maybe you could build on that. This is a podcast. Maybe there's another form of way people could learn about that.
Yeah, I'm resisting the obvious joke there about coming from the... Anyway, never mind. I won't go from coming from the south to a Manchester United podcast. But...
walked into that, Sam.
I've thought a lot about all of this, over leaving Westminster and the North, the way the North is treated, you know, the fact that we don't have basic stuff working properly, like I was just saying to David. And, you know, this job as Mayor of Greater Manchester, I think, has really given me the opportunity to try and speak to those things a lot more. Do you remember when we had that whole thing with Tier 3 in the pandemic? When we were just, you remember that?
It was miserable. I remember you spoke really passionately because we were still in tier three. Oh, it's all a blur, isn't it now?
But they were just trying to shut us down without helping people with their wages properly. Yeah. And it was just really miserable. I remember saying this, it felt like the Hunger Games. We were like, you know, in District 12, sort of like pleading with the capital to help us. And it just felt, you know, it really brought over how unfair this country is at times. But then, with HS2 recently, where they came here for their conference and just without even speaking to us, just cancelled everything they promised to us 10 years before. But, you know, all of it, you know, and the journey I've been on in politics with the work I did on Hillsborough and everything, you know, basically the country is not wired to support the north of England. You know, down there, the mentality is that they can or they feel they can treat us as second-class citizens. And it's come to a point where I kind of really wanted to lay out all of my experiences with these things and why the country doesn't work as well for us as it works for London and the South East. So I am writing a book that's coming out in March called Head North. I'm doing it jointly with the mayor of the Liverpool City Region. And we're both trying to say from our different perspectives, this country needs radically rewiring to make it work as well for the North of England as it works for the South of England. And I think we've come to a point now where that needs to be said because, you know, we can't really carry on. We're not going to accept being treated in the way that we have been before. So, yeah, look out for it. It's in all good bookshops soon.
Fantastic. Andy, thank you so much.
Oh, indeed. You're welcome.
We really appreciate your time coming on. I know it's probably been a pleasure to talk about football, but...
Can I ask, go easy on us in this game? We're going to be in a relegation battle.
Unfortunately, we can't control that, but...
Well, no, as I say, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to come on. It's a privilege to represent your club. I try and do it the best I can, but I can honestly assure you that in my organisation here and all of the other bodies that I lead in Greater Manchester, we're going to be really pulling together behind the club as it goes into this new era.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Cheers.
There we are, our very first politician.
I think we handled that impeccably.
We're serious now.
Do you know what it is? We can just turn our hand to anything.
We can turn our hand at anything.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was very good. Yeah. Very good at dodging questions, aren't they, politicians?
I thought he answered questions pretty well.
No, I'm kidding. I thought he was very good. Very good.
I don't know whether the bit was recorded at the beginning, but Maisie just went straight
in. Yeah, and he walked in the room. Yeah. Straight in.
We didn't
parking.
Even get a chance to start pressing record. He just went straight in.
I haven't sat down.
Tell me about Dean's Gate.
And then was like, I tweeted you. I didn't get a reply.
Did you actually, by the way? Why have you only mentioned that?
I tweeted him, yeah. I said it's on you, Andy Burnham. Car park. Dean's Gate, Christmas time, was like a car park. And actually tweeted him.
Are you happy with what he said to you? He blamed it on the council, didn't he?
Which I get, yeah. But see, I just don't know how much power Andy has. That's the thing. You don't know.
You need to go right at the top, Maisie.
Yeah. I love Manchester. And it's great that we've got a mayor like Andy who's doing his best for.
Yeah, imagine we had someone who wasn't interested
in exactly.
Sport.
Yeah.
They wouldn't be a good guest on our podcast.
He's a great ambassador for Manchester, for football and for the politics and what he's doing for Manchester as well.
The Pope
causing
cool,
trouble,
it?
But yeah. Yeah, the Pope, what a great story.
I'm going to read you an email. How does that sound? It says, Dear Helen, David and Sam, I'm writing to you from Sydney, Australia. And good I wanted night. To let you know how much I have enjoyed the podcast over the last couple of years. You've all done a brilliant job with the guests and I've thoroughly enjoyed listening to their stories about their lives and their time at United. I was fortunate enough to meet David when he visited Australia in 2019 and did a Q&A in New South Wales Supporters Club. Remember that?
Yep.
How was it?
Yeah, it was very good.
Did you meet someone called Brenda?
Brenda, I did. Yeah.
Brendan. Yeah, there's an N on the end of that. Not Brenda.
Bit of a difference.
Yeah, I remember Brendan, yeah.
And what about Brenda?
Top guy. No, Brenda wasn't there.
Right, okay.
No, Sheila was.
Wait, he said, keep up the great work Bruce, and I hope Manchester United podcast there. Team can make a visit to Australia in the near future. Are there any players in Australia? Who can we visit
in
Australia?
Loads of players.
Yeah, but former United players. Are there any?
Matt Bosnich.
Is he in Australia?
Well, yes, he's Australian. Was, but I did him.
Yeah.
We might not get out to Australia, Brendan, but you never know. So you can find
it's
us
actually
a good
the anniversary coming up.
Who's New South Wales?
New South Wales Supporters Branch. Yeah.
See you get around, don't you?
Get in touch, lads. Maybe we could do a live podcast
fair,
at the New
fair,
South Wales Supporters Club.
I was going to be invited, but it's not happened. So
yeah, get in touch,
guys. Get in touch,
Brendan. You've got the email address.
Let's get Helen and Sam over as well.
Yeah, we'd like that.
Well, Helen, leave Sam here.
Come on.
No, you've just had a new kid, so you have to be here for the baby.
Yeah, by the time we go,
because you can't just live around the corner. You know, it's 24 hours. In fact, my daughter's just gone to Sydney this week.
You're cracking me up. If nobody can see, it's the statue and everything.
It's like Bayern Munich all over again. He's got his coat on, hands in pockets.
He's got
and he's,
so much confidence in that Andy Burnham chat. Look at him. It's
practically horizontal.
King of the world there.
Yeah,
so funny. Yeah.
Right, I suppose we should go now before Maisie
that's it, guys.
Confirms that he is.
Hey, do you know what? I've enjoyed it. I really enjoyed myself today.
I'm really. You look like you have.
I have. Meeting up with you two and Andy and the rest of the crew. It's been good to be back. Good to be back.
It's lovely.
Yeah. Let's see if our producer Nick can get any more together.
Do you know what? I've just thought we should do a podcast in each of our hometowns.
Well, you won't want to come to Middleton.
Why?
You'd have a lovely time.
That's where you're from.
Yeah. I'm from Hyde. There's a lovely little town. We've got a canal and the beach. Very small, but it's very nice. Yeah.
I tell you what.
Let's make it happen.
I can get a camper van.
In Middleton.
Have a little road trip.
I can get a little camper van.
Oh my word, why don't you get the camper van and we'll get the boat to Belfast.
Boom.
And then we can get up to Southampton.
No, I know, Kent.
I'm not sure the boat goes from Southampton.
It's because Maisie kept saying you were from Southampton.
I know, yeah.
He's from Southampton.
No, he's not. It doesn't matter. Anyway, this is the end of our podcast. Hyde in Kent. Pretty small place, but it's where I'm from. Okay, that's it for another episode. Thank you if you made it all the way to the end. Remember, if you want to get in touch, you can email us, unitedpodcast@manunited.co.uk. That address is in the notes of this episode. If you need it, we're bringing you more episodes when we've got them. So turn on the notification bell. You'll know when they're released. You can do 5-star. You know all this. I don't know. It's the end of every single podcast, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just
stop.
Do all
just
the
stop,
good
Sam.
Stuff. Whatever. Have a great day. We'll see you later.
Bye. Bye.
Max and Paddy become Maisie and Bells on tour. That'd be class. See ya.